Hello, everybody, and welcome. Happy New Year. Happy 2020. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 91. And this particular episode is another one that I am having to go into the next year with. Many people listening to this, as I began to talk to and get to know some of the people, some of the listeners here, I'm real surprised. It's like, really? You listen? Yeah, you do. That's awesome. Thank you. And then some people that I'm really hoping do and go, oh, yeah, you have a podcast? I heard that. So, but it's interesting to hear who does. So I have people that are into the competitive thing and want titles on their dogs and want the trickiest dog, and they're doing all this fancy stuff. I have a large number of those. And then I have a lot of hunters. No, they don't want to go to the events and play the dog games and all that stuff. Think it's a waste of time. And that's fine. You know, for them it is. But they like to hunt with their dogs and have it be as fun and as effective, you know, and kind of professional as possible. So I have a whole lot of those folks. And then I have just people that are interested in hearing what this crazy lady has to say. And I love you guys. That's kind of fun. I hope I can keep you entertained and just get you to think a little bit. My topic today, and I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to call it. I will by the time I get this thing published. But my topic today is going to be one that's difficult to describe or name. But for those of us, for those of you who literally train your dog, or train maybe a lot of dogs, but train an animal, I want to talk about some aspects of training that can make you be maybe a little bit more successful with what you're doing. Maybe give you a little bit more to think about while you're doing it. Things that over the years I have kind of stumbled on, because I don't always, you can tell me anything, but until I drive the car myself, you know, then I'm not going to be sure about it. So, you know, I've listened and watched and paid a lot of attention. Most the two ways where I've learned the stuff that I come on here pretending like I know something. The two ways I've learned it. One is tens of thousands of hours alone, me and the dog going, I got to figure this out. That necessity is the mother of invention, right? That is really true. When you don't have somebody around to ask, or it's a question that you can't really ask because people will look at you like, what? What are you? Man, you're crazy. So when you have issues and stuff and you're trying to figure something out, the whys, the hows, the wins on this, again, necessity is truly the mother of invention. And I've learned so much, you know, 100 degrees with a dog and I'm going, I can't do it. This dog is no good. And realizing that doesn't work and you still figure it out anyway. And the other thing is by watching people who are truly, truly good with dogs, watching them and not watching to see something like, oh, look, they do that just like I do. I don't watch to see that, but just watch. And that's a very different thing. And it's a skill that's good when you're watching good people with dogs. And it's a particularly useful skill when you're doing your own dog. And that is an extremely keenly developed sense of non-judgmental observation. And that's a big title. Not just watching stuff, because I've sat many times at hunt tests with a group of people and somebody will come up and everyone's watching them, right? And then somebody's looking, look, he does that. He steps on his left foot right in the way of the dog. And so they're looking if they like to criticize or they like to feel like they're maybe better than everybody else. Don't we all? They look at somebody and they see the stuff that they're doing that they don't approve of. Or they look at them to go, look, I do it just like him, and we do that and that and that the same. So that, you know, then it makes you feel really good that way, right? Because you do something that other really good people do. But I'm not talking about either one of those kind of observations. I mean, observe the energy field between that dog and that person. Not don't judge it. You don't have a clue what's going on there. I don't have a clue what's going on there, and there aren't a lot of people that have done more dog stuff than me. So most of you don't have a clue. You just watch. You really don't know what the past 3 months have been and the past 3 days have been and what the relationship is with these guys. So you really do not know. But if you sit there and you just watch the interaction, the connection, if there is one, between that dog and that person, and just watch, you will learn a lot of things that you don't then have to go out in the field and do yourself and learn. So I guess it's kind of a shortcut, really. But if you just watch stuff, the next time you're at a training session or an event or a seminar or anything, and you watch stuff between that dog and that person. And when I'm talking about watch stuff, I am talking about look at the posture of the dog. Look at the posture of the handler. Look at where are the shoulders. I'm not kidding. I'm just taking you inside my world here a little bit. You know, is the person kind of slumped over? Or is the person standing upright? Or do they kind of have that chest out thing like, you know, like you would if you walked in a biker bar and you were ready to take them all on? What is the body language? Same with the dog. You know, where are the ears? Where's the head? A lot of times, and you know, sometimes these highly motivated guys, they do crazy stuff. So, you know, they get down and like do push-ups and bam, and they're up. Just pay attention. Don't make a judgment out of it. And don't make a judgment out of, oh, that's not a very well-trained dog. Just watch. So what's their body position? Do they have a lot of movement? Where are their ears? Where are their eyes? Where is the handler's eyes? Where are their hands? What are they doing with them? A lot of times you can see anger and frustration in the hands of somebody. If you just watch their hands, you can tell whether they're just having the best day in the world or not by the position of their hands. So before any stuff has happened, if you can do stuff like it, watch that. So already you kind of know the state of mind of the handler, and you can see the state of mind of the dog. And then you watch for very subtle cues between the two of them. Now, some people, the dog and the handler, very little communication between the two of them. And there's some people I just love that just have very little communication when they're running their dogs. So the dog is kind of like an independent party, came up, sat down, like, when's the action? Let's go. And the handler's come up and stands there and goes, well, okay, where's the action? He's ready, I'm sure, let's go. And they don't look down at their dog, and they don't, you know, they don't know what they're, so you can have like that where there's really, I mean, I think the handler could just walk away, dog's still good. They just sit there going, whatever, let's go, get the birds down or whatever, tap me on the head, whatever we're going to do. So you can tell a lot about if there's any connection or not. And a lot of times there's not. You have a gung-ho dog that's been trained without connection. Then they can function that way. Now, let's talk about where there are, and there's varying degrees of connection. There are some people, let's go to the other side of that. They walk up there, and the dog is very, very aware where the person is. Very, very, we're going to talk about walking to the line right now, to do some retrieves, let's just say that. So, they walk up there together, and the person just pulls dogs on the left side, pulls their left knee up forward a little bit. The dog just takes a little bit of a turn over towards the left and sits down. If that person stands squarely, the dog never moves. If that person just bends a knee or just moves a little bit of their hip direction and that dog's focus moves, I don't know if you've ever noticed that. Very subtle. It's nothing you'd see if you were just standing there. You saw it on a video. You'd be going, okay, when are they going to signal for the birds? There's a lot of communication going on right there. A whole lot. Because, and now we're on the other side, the highly connected, highly communicative pairing. So just the subtlest thing, like changing hip direction. I didn't say taking a step. Changing hip direction. Maybe bending a knee. Maybe just pulling the hips toward them or away. Now, if you do something very overt, very loud, like taking a small step, you will see the dog reflect either in their body position, where they're looking, or just their eyes. So that's the other extreme of that thing. So now you can watch, and it doesn't matter how they do it, how they communicate, what means what to anybody. But if you watch that level of communication between those two, then what you are seeing is a very high and continuous level of communication. Okay, it's easier probably to train when you have that thing present. It's easier to make the dog understand what you're asking. It's easier to make a few changes in, you know, as you upgrade in what you ask, or you add something to it, some complication. It's easier to do that when you have this continuous kind of communication. So just don't even worry about what you're doing, but give them a chance. Watch that kind of thing. And when you watch that and see how the communication is and what the person is telling the dog, if you can cue in on subtle things, if they are there, is the dog responding and listening or not? Or is the person not really sending very many cues, therefore the dog is, you know, kind of on its own, kind of deciding for itself what it's going to do? And then you can watch the ramifications of that. Whenever you judge retriever stuff, and you're sitting back behind everybody, and of course that's awesome. I love that, because you can just sit and just watch this stuff, and it's like a good TV show. And I don't sit there and go, "Oh, look at that! Golly, he doesn't know anything." I don't do that. It's just fascinating to watch what, if anything, is going on between these two, because generally, that pretty much tells you how the work is going to be. It just pretty much tells you how the work is going to be. So if there's a lot of communication and the dog is very tuned in and has been trained well, presumably it has, if somebody has that level of connection with the dog, you, unless the dog's having a bad day or something screwball happens, usually you see work that is carried out with the same amount of thought. And similarly, on the ones that aren't connected at all, sometimes you see great work. It may be hard to get the bird back, because they're just all crazy and wild, and you know, and somebody, I've watched some of the best dogs I've ever seen, where the owner just ripped a bird out of their mouth and the dog just took off to get the next one and got it, because it was so darn talented. And it probably could have been like finishing nationals and doing stuff like that if he just had a handler that took a little bit more time to communicate some stuff and get the dog more gathered up in its focus. But that's something to watch if you are interested in that kind of stuff. Now, for you hunters, a lot of times when I talk about this stuff, the hunter's eyes kind of glaze over. And that's a mistake. I mean, you don't need to know what to do running a triple on the line with a double blind up the middle. Okay, you don't have to know how to do that. But that doesn't mean that you and that dog having a very strong connection is not just as important when you are upland hunting, right? Or you just had 8 ducks that got dropped, group of you sitting there hunting, right? The more that you have that communication with that dog, and I'd say particularly in the upland field, the better it's going to be. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about on this stuff. So, because I spent a lot of time in the upland field, and in my world, I spend, I don't know, countless hours, just me and the dog. And so I'm watching them. And now I have a real strong driving force, because someone's paying me to get their dog as skilled as I possibly can. So I'm watching this dog, looking to have them tell me what they're thinking and what they're, you know, how they're managing this, which then tells me how to continue forward in my training program to get them to learn what I do. So, and let me say that again now, because now we're just talking about upland hunting. We're talking about getting dogs to be good in the upland field. I guess you could say I have a program. You know, I have a program. I always have people, you know, how many days does it take? I don't have a clue how many days it takes to do anything. But I do, you know, I have an approach. I know what I want to get out of that. I am completely limited by my own abilities, of course, and also by the natural abilities of this dog. If it takes a lot of repetition for them to learn stuff, okay, then like I've talked about on Learn About Your Puppy, then I know that I'm going to have to do this, you know, a fair amount to begin to get some of the results that I would like. if it's a dog that is, and some of these guys, particularly in Upland, really intuitive. It's like they're tapping into the greater knowledge of their ancestors. You know, and they're real intuitive about that. It's really good if I notice that. Because then that directs me on what kind of stuff it is that I have to do next. And some dogs, now we're going to get the thinker in here again. Like I said, I've said over and over, everybody's like, what kind of nose does he have? Now, I have never answered that question ever. Well, there's a few. That after a while, you know, and they can smell a frozen pea in a snowbank. All right, we got a pretty darn good nose there. But more importantly in the training of Upland dogs is what do they do with the information they gather? Do they stop and take in stuff that they are seeing or smelling or hearing? Do they take that in? So we're going to talk about you and your dog having the kind of connection that I was talking about observing in other people. And you can observe exactly the same thing in the Upland field. And that's where I see people way fall off, way disconnect on stuff, or never connect to begin with. And connection here, I think, is every bit as important as running a triple with a double blind up the middle. But when you go, so when you take a dog that's fairly new to this, one that isn't, but when you take a dog that doesn't have already a lot of preconceptions about stuff, and you go out in the Upland field and you're training them, right? Because you want a really effective hunter that doesn't miss birds, that doesn't drive them out of the field by their actions, necessarily. You know, you can't always help that. And that is working with you and that knows what they're doing. Okay, that's what we all want, whether we're going to compete or whether we're just going to go hunting. So the best thing you can do as a trainer is be the kind of observer that I talked about earlier. But now, instead of you observing a guy running his dog on a set of marks, watch your dog. And for those of you listening to this that get to see other people in the Upland field, watch this stuff. So when you go out in the field, there are a lot of factors to which that dog is subject. A lot of factors. But we just think about ours, right? Okay, we have some birds. They're somewhere out there in the middle near those brown things. So I'm going to get over downwind of that. And so, right? So you are going, okay, let's get him down. Let's get him over here where the birds are. So you head in this direction. Okay, now, when you're teaching a dog stuff, let me throw this at you. If you always do that, if you always have a good idea where the birds are, and you head in that direction slightly downwind, you are going to teach your dog, hey, in the beginning, just let this guy push you in a certain direction. Go the direction he's pushing you. And it, particularly if you're consistent about putting them, you know, 300 yards out, 400 yards out, 50 yards out, whatever it is you do, they'll learn, hey, the clock's ticking, and then in just a little while, you are going to be close to a bird. You're going to teach your dog that, whether you ever thought of it or not. So, and I watch this all the time. People put birds out, there they go. And they're literally pushing the dog. So when you push like that, you're teaching the dog that you will locate where the birds are. That most of the time, and if you have kind of a real airhead, it may take them a while to figure this out, but they will. You have one of those real intuitive aware guys, they'll figure it out the third time. And then they'll just let you push them. They'll just see where you're going, get out in front of that area, and just wait for that crosswind so they can get to find the bird. That happens all the time. If, on the other hand, if you're going to actually hunt birds, and if you're going to hunt like birds that are out there and trying to stay alive, then you don't know, you suspect where they are, or you've seen them over there before, or found them over there before, whatever it is. But most of the time when you're going to like do real hunting, right, you go into the field, and all you can do is give your dog every opportunity to locate birds if they're there. There's no pushing on there. I disagree with pushing your dog. Now, if you compete in the Bird Dog Challenge, push the holy crap out of that dog. I learned that when I trained some dogs for them. They take off at a dead run. for where the bird's going to be. Okay, that's a bird dog challenge competition. If you're going to go hunting and do not know if there are birds there or where they are, although obvious, generally obvious kind of locations birds would tend to be, what you want to do is let your dog figure that out. And let the dog figure out where birds are. They actually, once they get good, way better than you. Way better. If you push your dog to a certain location all the time, then they never get to learn to go out there and figure out where birds are going to be and how far away they are. And if it's just a place where they nested down for the night, but they're not there now, or whether they are there, or whether they're moving. The only way you can let your dog figure that out is if you stay out of it. So, okay, by this I'm not saying walk out into a field and stand there. Because if you've taught your dog the way that I always do, is he's always going to be in gun range with me. Okay, you can't just take off and go wherever you want, because that's not useful to me. We need to be, you know, reasonably close together, whatever reasonably close is for you. And if your dog has a staunch pointer, you just need to keep it basically gun range. Or if you have a flusher, it needs to be gun range. Hey, but so you need to continue to move so that they know that we are continuing to go and look for birds. But you have to allow them to learn how to find where birds are. And the only way they can do that is if they're doing it without you telling them what to do. But you can't know this unless you pay attention to your dog, unless you observe. If you're one of those type A people, and I know a lot of these guys, right, and they got birds out there, they put them over in this one particular area, because it'd be where they'd go if they were hunting, and then they, you know, they head out there, and so I've had people, when they're doing this with me, they're in front of me. I'm running the dog, and this person is in front of me. I was like, what are you doing? You're pushing out to where the bird is. That is not what we're doing. This is the dog's job, not yours. Now, we're training right now, right? We're not hunting. And so I need the dog to learn how to get the dog to go do all the finding and all the figuring out where birds are. I give them the opportunities, and I give them well set up ones from which they can learn, but I let them learn. So I'm never and ever ahead of my dog, and I am never ever pushing my dog. If they slow down because they're scenting something, assuming it's not they're going to eat some coyote poop or something, if they're slowing down because they're trying to figure something out, then I do too. You know, and a lot of times on these young guys, folks, they are thinking or doing whatever it is they're doing, trying so hard to figure this stuff out. And what is that? You know, and a lot of times the young guys, they'll go walk up on a mouse nest. Okay, you know, I don't blame them. I understand that. It's like, oh, there's a live thing right over here, a live bunch of things. And they'll lock up. I don't even say no. Because I don't want them to think, hey, you're pointing something. No, don't do that. And they don't go, I'm pointing a mouse thing. And that is not appropriate. I am only to point game birds. And, they don't know that stuff. So if they go find a mouse nest, which the new guys tend to do, and lock up and point, you know, that's cool. I'll stand there, too, until they, you know, they'll jump on it or do something. And then if they're kind of obsessed with it, I'll call, hey, let's go. Come on, let's keep going. And I let them figure out that the mouse nest is not something that we're looking for. And after they've been on enough birds, then they, you know, the mouse nest don't really register anymore. They know it's there, but they move on because that's not what they're looking for. But you can't go in there, like I see people do, and say no, because what are you saying no to? Well, now we're in the people head. Well, he's pointing a mouse nest, and I don't want him to do that. So I'm telling him, no, don't point a mouse nest. I don't think that's what the dog's getting. The dog is pointing something and being told no, and I'm not sure he's going, oh, it's not a bird. I don't think they have it's not a bird thought. So now they're in trouble for pointing something. So you need to be aware at that level of your animal. And what is he pointing? Is it, just because he's pointing doesn't mean it's a bird. He could be pointing a skunk. But if you pay enough attention over time and through your training, you can tell what they're smelling. You can tell the way they act when it's going to be a little furry thing you really don't want them being involved with. You can tell sometimes when it's a snake, when it gets warmer, they do act funny, you know, if you haven't de-snaked them. it's a different deal when they start smelling that. You know, and then when they smell a meadowlark nest. Now, you don't know them off a meadowlark nest, at least I don't. But they learn quickly. That thing just flies away as soon as you get over there. And so they learn that's not what we're looking for. But they have to be given the opportunities. And if you pay attention and watch your, and don't push them, because that's pressure. That is pressure. And when you're pushing and your dog is pushing, you're going to push birds if they're actually unplanted real birds. And sometimes the real flighty planted birds you're going to push. So you don't want that energy out there when we are training. You want that dog to head out in the field very quickly. If you did the walk, they already know. They learn to use the wind. And you'll, if you ever notice when you're crosswinding, just I hope people have noticed this. You'll experience, guys, probably. And when you're crosswinding, the dog is going to take dips and do dips and loops downwind. And just think for a minute, why would they, you know, you're crosswinding, you're going crosswind, and they're going to be doing some loops and stuff. People call it quartering. And they're going to do it downwind, not upwind. And the reason for that is because if they go upwind, there's not any new data. It's the wind that they've been getting information from. But when they take a little loop downwind, they will now wind things that they did not before because they were upwind of them. So dogs, if you upwind hunt and train, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, if you ever do, you will. But you should be able to notice that your dog always does that. They're going to gather more information. They aren't going to, in a crosswind, they're not going to quarter in front of you and go to the right and go to the left, because that makes no sense. They'll only gather new information if they go to places where they have not gotten any wind data yet. So it would be good if you could learn to observe your dog and see those kind of things, because that's what, and let them do it. Don't get mad at them because they're looping over to the left and you want them to the right, because there's no reason for them to go. So when you start get mad at them and trying to get them to quarter in front of you in a crosswind and get over that way, you know, and then you kind of get angry. Now they get in trouble, and they have no clue why they're getting in trouble, because they're just trying to look for stuff the best way they know how. So you, as the dog trainer now, hunting guys and everybody else, needs to be able to shrink yourself down enough to be able to see these kind of things. You should be able to see when your dog is smelling something it has never smelled before. Again, snake skin, you know, dead toad. Or when they're getting wind of a bird. And you can tell when they're getting wind of a bird that's a long ways off, medium ways, or very close. They tell you the difference in a variety of ways. And different dogs are different ways. Sometimes where their head is, how their tail goes, if they get off birdie and tail wiggly. You can tell all that, but this is your time to learn that stuff. So two major benefits from this highly developed powers of observation while you do this. One is the dog knows you're doing this. And I can just tell you they really appreciate it, because you are allowing them to grow and expand and get better and better by experience and skill the way that they learn, not by just being robotically told what to do. So when they appreciate that, and then are far more willing, if you do interject, if you do get in the middle of that, they're gonna believe in you and give you a little more attention than if you're just always having them do dumb stuff like quarter more into the wind, and you keep making them do stuff that doesn't intuitively make sense to them. You become far more noise than a valuable contributor to the whole endeavor that you're doing. The other part, if you do this and pay a lot of attention, is you know exactly what's happening with your dog. You know if there's no birds here. You know, I've done many dogs where you go in a field in a short time, they just basically, they're everything, ears drop, tails drop, shoulders drop, head drops, and they're going, there's nothing here. You know, and it's like, and I've learned that because I hunt an empty field to teach dogs to stay in range and all that kind of stuff. And I've watched dogs that I took into an empty field to do the stuff I wanted to do, And they just went, and these are the really good ones, right? They went in there and they went, there's nothing here. So they dutifully go out there and they're now they're kind of enjoying stuff. They know there's no birds. They told me there's no birds in here. And I know some of you guys have had dogs that do that and tell you that. It's amazing. And again, these are the real intuitive ones. And I don't know how that works. I've just seen it work so much. So they tell you if there's nothing there. They tell you if they are. They tell you if, yeah, but they're 300 yards that way. They will tell you that stuff. And if you learn to pay attention to these dogs, and you listen to this and you know what it means because you've seen it, then you're not going to waste your time hunting where there's nothing to hunt. Or if you're in competition, leave that part of the field and go to another because obviously there's nothing there. So it makes both of you a lot better at what it is you're doing because you have learned everything this dog is telling you and you have given this dog opportunities to learn how this works and to function not as a robot, which I see a lot, but to function as a really efficient, you know, a really proficient locator of birds and not mouse nests and meadowlark nests. So your powers of observation without judgment toward your dog in all of the stuff you do is the best shortcut you've got to get to wherever it is you're trying to go with this stuff. Because when you do this, for one, you're not punishing and correcting the dog all the time. That's a pretty big deflator like it would be for you. If I went to train dogs with you and everything you did, I went, oh my God, you're doing that? No, don't do that. This is what, you know, about the third or fourth time, you kind of wish that just go back to orchard. However, if we go out and I ask you, why do you do that? What do you get out of that? And you tell me, and so I say, have you ever tried that? What would happen? You know, and I treated you like you were a highly competent individual. You would probably say, okay, stay another day. I'm getting something out of this. Same thing with your dog. You cannot be out there constantly correcting them, constantly punishing them to make them be good hunters. Now, that said, if you guys have heard any of these other ones, there's no dog going to be out of gun range. They aren't going to be chasing birds and running around unless they're little puppies. Right? So all the rules of cooperation are present. But once I have those, you stay in gun range. You don't get to chase something if it pops up and flies away. You come if I call you. I don't want them over there investigating a snake if I don't know what kind it is, right? So I have all that in place. But once I do, I get out of the way. And I watch these dogs and I let them tell me what their story is. What, you know, are they entirely scent-based? I've seen many, many really, really good dogs locate birds, find birds with their nose, and the bird just pops up and walks away, and they never see it, right? So they're just using one thing, and they're not also doing that look around thing like a more experienced dog, or maybe a little bit just more intuitive dog will do. So, you know, find out what your dog is and where their strengths are and what their weaknesses are, and without judging them, right? Just like, I'm going to come and spend 3 or 4 days with you, working with you and your dog. And if I spend the whole time telling you everything I saw you do wrong, then this is not going to be what it could be. Now, if you're like going to shoot over top of your dog, I'm going to weigh in right there, right? Safety stuff, absolutely. But in terms of developing you as a good dog trainer, it's going to be a lot better if I'm not beating you up all the time. And so when you are teaching dogs, once you get the rules, that's where you can figuratively speaking beat them up, right? You gotta come when I call. You can't go farther than that. You can't chase stuff. That's where we, you know, say, all right, this is non-negotiable. This is what you're gonna do. Now with that in place, you go figure this stuff out. And the more that you watch them, okay, and just like I've said before too, when you are completely focused on them and what they're doing, then they know it. And so they are connected back with you. If while you're in the middle of this, you get on the phone or you talk to somebody or you watch the eagle fly over and you disconnect, right? They just found out, hey, So I'm not intermittent. Yeah. You know, sometimes we're on, sometimes we're off. It's just a lot better to have it where it's not that way. So if I can summarize this now, we're 35 minutes here. If I can kind of pull this together. So as a way to look at observation without judgment, watch somebody else and their dog. And just see what kind of connection they have, what kind of communication they have, how sensitive they are to one another, how responsive they are to one another. Just watch that. And then see what work comes out of, you know, real connected, not connected, and everything in between. And then take those same objective, unbiased powers of observation when you go out and work with your dog. And what I see most people do, and I would say really a lot men, but you know, I don't know, but is they already got this, you know, hunting is such a man sport. And so, you know, they got this really nice gun and they got this beautiful new Ford truck over here and the fanciest dog box you ever saw, right? And they got this fancy dog, it's been trained, and by God, they're going to go out there, and they have all these preconceptions and all this stuff, and they're big and strong and powerful, right? And they're standing upright with the kind of the chest out, like when you walk into the biker bar, and they're going to go, right, dead right there, dead. I hate that when I see that, because I would rather see the college professor guy that's going to go out there, and his chest isn't all stuck out, but he's like, this is awesome. Let's go, you know, let's go do this and let's see what happens. And then they are aware of what their dog is thinking, what's happening, what their dog is learning, if their dog is missing something. If they're missing something, you don't go over there and whack them in the head and go, get over here, you dumbass, get over here. You don't do that. Let them miss it, suffer the consequences of missing it, and then see if you can again provide an opportunity where maybe next time they don't. Okay, this, I don't know if this is easy to distinguish for people or not, but dog training is not hunting. Hunting is hunting, and dog training is dog training. And the more that you give your dog the right opportunity, and then don't push them, drive them, to, you know, robotically direct them, but instead allow it to be the learning experience for the dog and for you. People do not seem to get that, right? When you go out with a dog, with your dog, you need to be paying complete attention to what the dog is telling you in terms of what are they thinking, what are they trying, what methods are they using to locate birds, are they correctly locating birds, and if they're not, you can't make them. This is a thing that you've got to develop within them, and they have to have confidence in it. So, and in the peer pressure thing and the training groups deal is incredible and a complete waste of time. So, and the talking thing. If you're going out in a field with somebody and you guys are chatting the whole way, then you're missing 3/4 of what's happening out there. And yeah, you are. If you don't think you are, then you don't know what I'm talking about. Because if you ever go out and just let that dog tell you every step of the way what they're thinking. Sometimes they're worried. They're worried about you. Where is he? Oh, I better stay with him. Uh-oh. And in the beginning, after you, you know, teach them and de-chase them or teach them where they need to be, they worry for a little while, right? So let them worry for a little while. And they're going to learn, you don't have to worry. All you have to do is stay together. So much to be aware of in the upland training field, and I haven't even touched on a third of it here, but so much to be aware of if you can step back from being the driver and being the programmer of the robot, and allowing this living creature out there to gain skills, confidence, stay within the rules, don't drop your standards. And a lot of times you see a lot of good things happen that you never would have if you'd have been nagging the heck out of them all the time because they weren't doing what you thought they should be. So that's probably, again, if you to get to a trained animal for whatever purpose, I don't care what it is, and it, you know, can't, it's not even upper field. It's other stuff too. Those of you that do the other, you know, the dogs that run around and jump over stuff and go through the tubes and all that kind of thing, kind of wild and crazy. It's same thing. If you, when those people are working with them, if you pay attention and let the dog tell you, I'm afraid of that. I love that. I don't understand that. When you get this way, I don't do that. When you get that way, then I'll try really hard. And you take all of that information in, you're going to be a better trainer or one of those guys. And you will be able to adjust to your dog, which is something that we all need to do. Don't put them through the program. Have a program that you would like to get from the beginning to the end, and then take that individual that you have, let them give you feedback all the time, and proceed responding to what it is they need every time you do that. So there's a lot to think about. So I guess the best thing I can say is the next time you go out with your dog, don't go out with your buddy and he's got his new gun and he can hardly wait and everybody's excited and we're looking for the first bird contact and I heard he's really steady and all this thinking and stuff. Just go out there and watch what that dog is telling you. And, you know, when they get at this stuff, then you can kind of start having a conversation because they don't need you anymore. They're so good at what they do. But that learning part and getting to that part can be done in as expedient a way as possible. I don't like to say shortest time, but it'll be the shortest time. If you do that by constantly getting feedback from your dog and adjusting your training program to that, that's that two-way communication, and then proceeding. And you will become a much, much better dog trainer, and your dog will really, really appreciate it and have a lot more fun. So I'll leave you with that. And as the winter goes on, I just hope everybody stays warm enough and no harm to dogs. And for heaven's sakes, safety out there when you're hunting, guys. Safety. We already had some bad stuff happen this year. So safety first. You know, put all this time and effort into a dog to have somebody accidentally shoot it. So please be careful. And I will be back soon.